Good evening, everybody. I'd like to call the RAC meeting to order. My name's Dan Turk. I'm a vice chair for EC. Barbara's asked me to sub for her today. I just talked to her earlier today. She's enjoying her vacation in Colorado. But she is actually, she should be listening to the meeting at this time. I tell you, she is very dedicated to do that. Welcome for attending. I'm excited about our new lighting. It's kind of throwing me off a little bit. This is the first time I've actually chaired a meeting like this, so please, any help that you guys can give me with parliamentary procedure or making sure that I've heard you or seen you if you want to make a comment. I'm a pretty informal guy, so, you know, just let me know and I'll do my best. The first item on the agenda is the call to order and the roll call. We have a couple new members here, so Barbara thought it'd be nice if we went around the table and briefly introduced ourselves. So I'd like to start. My name is Dan. I've been Dan Turk. I've been a member of the RAC for a year and a half, and I'm from D.C. I ride the rail and the buses, and I've really enjoyed participating in the RAC in terms of getting to know Metro and also just participating in the committees and just getting to know people that are very interested in solving what is a huge challenge for the Metro area.
Hi, my name is Clarence Flanders. I am a new member of the RAC. I work at Georgetown University, and I am a Metro rider, the rail and the bus. Recently moved to Glover.
DC.
Good evening. My name is Jim Zepp. I'm representing, I guess, Montgomery County, Maryland. Musical accompaniment. I also happen to be the first vice president of the Montgomery County Civic Federation. We represent community and neighborhood associations in Montgomery County. Approximately about one-third of the county's population is represented by our various member groups. I'm also currently serving as a member of the Montgomery County Transit Task Force, which is trying to figure out financing for the bus rapid transit system that the county wants to build by creating its own independent transit authority. So we're looking at spending several billions of dollars to do that in an effort to go it alone. I have a professional background in planning. I've worked previously for an 8-county regional planning commission as well as 2 metropolitan planning organizations. So I have that background as well. Thank you.
My name is Pat Sheehan. I've been on this committee ever since it started. I think it's been, what, 10, 15 years, something like that. Anyway, I am an appointed member through the Accessibility Advisory Committee, sister committee to this committee. I bring disability issues to this committee that I chair, from the Accessibility Advisory Committee, so that what you guys are doing gets coordinated with what my committee does. I try to bring that perspective back to my committee, and I think it's useful. There's a lot of things that we have in common, particularly right now, I think, in the area of budgets and proposals and going forward with the board. So appreciate the relationship that AAC has with this committee. And I'm from Silver Spring, Maryland, Montgomery County area, so represent that also in the disability community as far as it extends on this committee. Thanks.
Good evening. I'm Lorraine Silva, and I represent Arlington County. And I have been with the RAC since 2009. I use all kinds of transit, modes of transit, so whether it's even the local forms. So I have been a local user also of transit.
I'm Bob Fogel. I am the Maryland Vice Chair for RAC, and I live in Montgomery County. I've been on RAC for about a year and a half, and I use Metro and the Montgomery County ride-on bus system.
I am Jeremiah Bush. I am a member of, this is my first year on the RAC. I'm also chairman of the RAC Budget Finance Committee. I represent Fairfax County.
Hi, everyone. Hi, everyone. My name is Abani Gala. I'm an Arlington writer, and this is also my first year on the RAC. I'm in the PPP committee, and I ride rail and bus.
I'm Mary Ann Zimmerman, and I am from Silver Spring, Maryland. And I knew him, but I didn't realize why. Another thing I'm on is the Silver Spring Citizen Advisory Board, and we see each other at many meetings. And so it's fun to be on the same board working on issues. We are working on issues sometimes from the other side of the table in our other roles. I'm on the PPP committee, and this is my third year on the RAC. And it's good to have you.
My name is Ryan Alty. I am a representative for the D.C. area. I'm a habitual bus and rail rider. In my daily life, I'm a transportation policy advisor at the British Embassy here in Washington, D.C.
Hi, I'm Teresa Wells, and I represent PG County. I became a member in June, and I use both the rail and the bus.
Thank you, everyone. One thing that should be mentioned, especially for the new people, is even recently we have had quite a turnover with people in the committee. And what that does is it really opens things up for going in different directions and working on different types of things. So I would encourage everybody, but especially you guys just starting off, you know, if there's some things that you would like to do, I think the first step is finding which of the committees would be the most applicable. And what I'd like is later on in the meeting, when the committees give their reports, if they can briefly describe a little bit what the scope of that committee is, to give the new members an idea. But very much welcome. The next item on the agenda is the public comment period. Do we have any public comments? Okay, Jeff?
Good evening. I'm Jeff Larimore. I think that this is the one-year anniversary of when I started coming to most of the RAC meetings. And I just wanted to share with you the latest updates about the Blue Line since the new vital signs came out. So this is, in the latest vital signs, it was the seventh straight month where the afternoon crowding in the rush hour exceeded Metro's target of 100 passengers per car. So it is a continuing ongoing issue of overcrowding due to the lack of trains that Metro is sending on the Blue Line. And just for some perspective on this, since Metro started tracking the statistic in 2012, all other lines combined have only had 5 months total where they've exceeded that target. And the Blue Line is now 7 consecutive months exceeding the target of 100 per car. So this is very much outside of the way Metro is trying to operate their system and the way it has been and currently is for all the other lines. And that's why also, so that's something you can get out of the vital signs. I encourage you to take a look at it because I think there's lots of good information there. But what's not in the vital signs is how this compounds a problem when we have the long headways and the overcrowded cars. So I want to share a story from last week. So Arlington Cemetery among Blue Line riders is increasingly known as all floating hell because of the problems it presents with this combination of overcrowded cars and very few cars going through. So last week, a train offloaded Arlington Cemetery at 5:12 p.m., according to the incident report. And people started tweeting about it soon after that. When my train went through at 6:06 p.m., you could barely even tell that people had been able to get on trains. The people had been waiting there for 45 minutes, not able to get on trains, because there's so few cars per hour, and everyone that was going through, very few people got on. On my car, which was the first car, it should be the least crowded car, literally about 5 or 10 people were able to get on. So this is an ongoing problem, and I really do encourage Metro to find ways to address this. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. We appreciate you coming in and keeping us alert as to the situation. It is very interesting the realities that you have to deal with relative to maybe other riders on other lines. This issue of the blue line is something I think that as a RAC we've attempted to find a good way to address, and I think we're still struggling with that a little bit. But thank you very much. The next item on the agenda is the approval of the past agenda, which is in our packets. Does anybody have any recommendations? Yes. Oh, of our agenda here. Okay, sorry. Is the approval of our current agenda. Do we need a motion for that, John?
So moved.
Okay.
Second.
All right, great. Do we need to approve the past one, John? Or
no, you do that
later. Oh, the minutes will come later. Okay, thank you. So the next item on our agenda is our presentation. Jim Hamray, Director of the Office of Bus Planning, Scheduling, and Customer Facilities for WMATA, has been nice enough to come down here and brief us on the next batch of service changes. Thanks for coming, Jim.
Well, it's my pleasure. Good evening, everybody. Thank you for the opportunity to come and talk to you about this year's State of Good Operations public hearing and the proposals that we have made.
Jim, sorry to interrupt. Sure. Would you prefer that we wait until after the presentation for questions, or are you okay with questions along the way?
If this presentation triggers a question, I can go ahead and clarify it as we go.
Okay.
It does not include all of the proposals, so the intent is I'll give you a general summary of why we're doing this, and then we can talk about the particulars as we get to it.
Thank you.
So,
is this an annual exercise?
Yes, this is actually the sixth year that we've done this, so let me tell you about it. And, go ahead and flip to the next. So the purpose is to gather feedback from customers and stakeholders. State of good operations is what we call trying to meet the standards to address the types of things that the gentleman just spoke about with the blue line, but on buses. We have bus lines that are crowded. We have bus lines that have on-time issues. We have bus lines that have new developments. We have bus lines that have developments that have closed and ridership that's eroded. So the purpose is to be able to balance out the interests of riders, jurisdictions, and be good stewards of the public resources. And so this year, we have a series of service changes, adds up to 81 different proposals, which includes something requested by the jurisdictions, and that was a review of the Dulles Corridor Service, the 5A, and a couple fare-related proposals, one of which was actually suggested by a citizen at last year's budget hearing. It triggered a positive response with me, and so we followed up, and we're going to I'll talk to you about that. Next slide. Where do the proposals come from? Well, a lot of them come from the lady sitting to my right. Let me introduce Julie Hirschhorn, who is our manager of the planning group, the service development and planning group, and we do as a routine. Annually, we develop, we've been developing corridor plans, similar to what the DRT folks have been doing up in Montgomery. We've done George Avenue, we've done East-West Highway, we've done Gears Mill, we've done New Hampshire, and we've gone through all of the major corridors around the region. We also do what are called service evaluations, where we look at a three-year horizon of what is working, what's not working, what strategically do we need to change about a line. From those come a lot of the recommendations that we generate. We are continually receiving comments and suggestions from the public. I think we average about 5,000 comments for Metrobus each month through the customer service program. The local governments that pay for services that have development programs, have transit development plans, have master transportation plans, generate requests and requirements. And then Julie's staff also go through a formal process of evaluation of the services, looking for the weak links, looking for the opportunities, and so from this range of, actually call it the planning triangle, from this range of inputs, we filter out and set priorities working with our jurisdictional partners about what needs to be done first, and that's what goes into our state of good operations. Next slide, please. The intent is to come up with recommendations that, as the list here provides, adds capacity or increases service where there is a need. For example, a couple years ago, we had really extreme crowding issues on 16th Street. So we worked with the community, we worked with the district, and came up with some proposals that routed through this process to address that. And so the crowding is still there, but it is less severe, and we get less complaints that people at the end can't get on the bus. We look primarily at trying to improve the on-time performance. The system objective is 80% on time. That's a generated by a complicated data collection that process that reports about, I think right now we're reporting about 2 million time points a month. And the statistic is generated from that. We have lines and services that are significantly below that. And so we have been, for example, working on the X line, which was a proposal from last year, the H Street Northwest Northeast service, trying to do improvements there. We will occasionally look at streamlining operations where there are multiple route paths that may be duplicating or may be reducing the frequency at a key location. Or if the local services have started up a new service, then we will remove that redundancy. We're looking to add new routes or extending existing routes to meet new requirements. Replace as much as possible some unproductive segments. And that's always in the eye of the beholder, but we do have adopted guidelines that once a service performs below a threshold, then we're obligated to look at it, make recommendations to either try and get it above that threshold or take actions to reduce the resource associated. And lastly, we look as we develop our plans to see if there is an alternative available, whether it be with the rail or other bus services or with other bus companies, to make that trip so that we're not abandoning the policy objective of providing maximum access to jobs and life activities around the region, but we are meeting our obligation as good stewards of public resource. Moving on. The anticipated result then is to really make our service more reliable, to add ridership, and that helps us with what's called the cost recovery from the fare box, the ratio between the fares collected and the cost of providing the service. The measure that gets part of the vital signs report that was measured is the on-time performance, and ultimately it's about the efficient use of our resources. For example, in fiscal 16, which is the budget year that began July 1, there was no money provided to expand service or to address state of good operations issues. And so this exercise is designed to be budget neutral. So the amount of money that we have in fiscal 16 is all we have. And what this is moving resources around to meet priority requirements. On the next slide, there is an extensive public input. And at this point, I want to introduce Lisa Schooley, who is our public participation plan coordinator. Jason Menzer, who is our director of our Office of Research, who have been working extensively over the past couple of months, actually. I think Lisa says that the comment period actually began August 15th and is running through September 23rd. There have been over 25 roadshows where we've been out to do public hearings, to do presentations. Our staff is up in Northeast at the ANC in Lincoln Heights, I believe it is, doing engaging the community to talk about services up there. We had a meeting last week over in Arlington where we've been going everywhere that we have been invited to go. Julie was at West Falls Church handing out brochures just recently. So we've been very actively going about trying to meet customers when they're on our services and engaging them. Other communication tactics include advertisements, signage, newspaper articles. Greater Washington did a really good piece about the range of proposals online. And so as quotes there on the presentation, I think the new number is there have been 4,500 surveys online and another 340 written testimony. So you can see we're approaching over 5,000 total comments, 2,200 of which stayed with just the survey and another 2,200 of which decided to write a paragraph or a tome or an entire document, an entire encyclopedia. And Jason and some of our staff have been trying to parse out the meaningful bits amongst all of the contributions, and we really appreciate the richness, the tone, the details that folks are giving us. We are about making the service work for the customer. On the next slide, which is the wrap-up, and by the way, this is the same presentation I give to the board, we continue to gather customer reactions. That's why we're here talking to you tonight. The public hearing is actually tomorrow night. It's being set up in the room next door in the boardroom. There'll be an open house. We'll have staff available from 5 o'clock on. Hearing starts at, I believe it's 6:30. Yes, 6:30. And the chairman, Mr. Downey, will be officiating. I'll be doing this presentation again. And then we will be talking to folks that are listening to them. There's 12 speakers signed up so far. And we hope that we get a lot more folks who take the time to drop in. And having just one public hearing is unique. This is the first time we've been through the formal public participation plan as adopted by the board. I think it was last fall. They used some of it for the budget hearings, but this is the first time that we've had it for the bus service changes. In the past, we used to set up a public hearing in each of the jurisdictions, so we would get to do the roadshow 6 times. And so this is a little bit different. Instead of having the formal opportunities for oratory that the public hearing provides, we went out and talked to folks, engaged, and we're hoping that that this change in approach will be well received and give us the nuance and the feedback that the board is looking for so that they can make their decisions. So we'll be going back to the board committee, the Customer Service and Operations Committee, the first Thursday of November with the draft recommendations. And then the board will act 2 weeks later, hopefully, to approve whatever final package makes it through the committee discussions, and then we begin implementation, and the implementation starts out in December with a few items. There'll be more items in March, and And the really big items will be implemented in June, which will be the start of our fiscal 17. So this is a critical process that allows us to have meaningful conversations with our riders about the things that we should do for good business practices to run Metrobus effectively and efficiently outside of the context of the budget. Obviously, next spring we'll be back at it and everybody will be duking it out to get their favorite program funded. This takes the pressure off. The money we have is the money we have. This is about how do we best use it to meet the needs and priorities that the region has set. And that's what makes this process unique, and it is the sixth one in a row that we have done. And we're real proud of this whole process. So with that, I'll stop talking and take any questions.
Thank you, Jim. First of all, thank you so much for coming down and bringing your whole team with you. We really appreciate that. We appreciate the responsiveness and just the chance to ask questions about anything on the bus side. We really appreciate that. Just time-wise, we have got about 20 minutes. I've been told the first thing we need to do is open it up for any public comments, if there are any. Are there any public comments on Jim's presentation? Okay. Now let's go around for some questions. I would ask you to please keep it to one question. And if you have a question, yes, raise your name tag. Clarence, do you want to start off with?
So you mentioned that the overall current performance is about 80%. So I guess the question I have is there sort of an industry standard for across cities about, like, what do metropolitan bus systems aim for? Is there a target, or is it sort of as whatever we get as good as we're going to get?
There are standard industry practices, but they are quite varied in how they collect data. Baltimore measures it by at the start of the trip and the end of the trip. We actually measure every time point that a bus passes, an average of about 5 time points per line. We do 15,000 trips a day, so that's about 75,000 time points a day that we're measuring ourselves against. It's one of the most extreme data-rich measures in the industry. Which is a little bit to our disadvantage when we're trying to make ourselves look good, but it is important to try and reflect what the customer experience is, and it'll pick up the nuances of whether I even have the time point spacing correct, not just the performance of the bus, but the performance of the schedule as well.
Marianne? You're next. And yeah, please feel free, guys, to get up and look at
the we have good visual
good information aids, they've given us here.
Well, sort of my more general question was, in Montgomery County, just where did you have your sort of your pop-ups, your discussions?
I know off the top of my head we've been up at Houston Station several times, Silver Spring Station several times.
Okay.
And you're going to the Beers Mill.
Okay. Thank you.
Brian?
So I'm very heartened to see that quite a few of these lines, there's actually an extension to the service that's being offered right now. There's a few, especially in D.C., where service is being kind of rolled back, so maybe a third of the line is not going to be finished out because it's seen as kind of unproductive, which I can agree with. What I think most people would ask then at that point is, does that mean that bus is going to be doing, since it's going to be doing a shorter route, it'll be doing a more frequent route? I'm looking at the D1 here where it essentially stops before it gets all the way down to Federal Triangle. Will that mean that bus will be running more frequent past some of the time points that you guys have right now, or will it essentially be stopping, waiting 15 minutes, and then kind of on a break, and then heading back the route that it came? Not that one. That's just
no
a reference.
Either suggestion. So this is, in the planning world, time is currency. And so, for example, on the D1, the reduction between DuPont and Federal Triangle, that time is saved and used elsewhere in the city to meet needs. The frequency won't change for folks coming out of Glover Park. They'll see the D1 the same number of times. And that bus, when it gets down to DuPont, will most likely cycle back to make the next trip. Or if that's not efficient, then we'll attach it to some other route and have it run a different. It's called interline, where a bus does one route and then it switches over to another route because it's more efficient than waiting for the cycle to go back. And so that's the currency, is we have to take, if we want to add anywhere, we have to take it from somewhere. And so that's an example.
Let's see, any more questions?
I think you're adding one extra trip.
Yes, Pat.
To Global Park.
Yeah. This is Pat Sheehan. I just want to make sure, Jim, that, and we've talked about this before, that when bus routes are being changed, that individuals that are using Metro Access will not be adversely impacted. I know that we agreed on a kind of protocol that you would make sure that before a bus stop was eliminated, a bus route was eliminated or reduced, that the impact on Metro Access would be negligible. I think when this discussion came up in an AAC meeting we had recently, Mr. Kent assured us that you look at everything beforehand, make sure that that's not going to happen. So hopefully we still have that protocol still in effect and we're in good shape.
That's correct. We actually made a presentation to the AAC, was it July? Yeah, in July, to give you the first heads up as to what we were proposing. Our commitment is that we will treat disabled passengers with the same courtesy and care that we treat everybody else. And I think the only service proposal that affects the Metro Access service area is the W19, which we had advertised last year.
Further exploration discovered the W19 does not affect the Metro Access service.
No. So we're not going to
Indiana
anyway?
Yeah, we're not reducing anything, but on the positive side, the Sunday edition, if we're able to do it, we have Sunday service in Greenville, we'll extend the stay of service.
That's great.
We're doing that research.
Appreciate to have that. Yeah, appreciate the fact that you take that into consideration. And I know the community that deals with Metro Access appreciates, you know, the bus lines and the additional Metro Access that goes along with it. Thanks.
James, you had a question.
Well, thank you for that suggestion. I'll let Lisa answer because that is part of the plan.
Well, just to respond to that in a couple ways. We now have at Metro, because of the public participation plan, a representative that works with community-based organizations exclusively. So for this, and I know it wasn't listed on the public input, she's actually been going out to community-based organizations, lots of social service agencies, people focusing on limited English proficient populations, and really pushing out this information. So that, for this exercise, is true. Now, when it comes to corridor studies going forward, especially when we're studying a region, that will definitely be the case. We really rely on our government relations folks to work on a lot of your types of organizations, but with the community-based organizations for our social services, we have someone. So going forward, absolutely. And any kind of information that you have with those organizations, I will take. I'll be happy to take the list. So please provide. Thank you.
Yeah, and just to emphasize, that's been the practice in all of our studies, is to try and engage every level of the community that we can. And if the Civic Federation would like to have us come make a presentation about Metrobus, we'd love to. So we turn down no opportunities to talk about our favorite stuff.
I can vouch for that because Jim takes every opportunity to come and talk to us or subcommittees about bus, and we appreciate that. And he's always very open, and I think the whole team is very open to suggestions and just to have a good conversation. Bob, you have a question?
I just wondered, is the scope of the changes that you're proposing this year in line with past years?
Actually a little smaller. I think last year we had almost $5 million worth of proposals. I think this year it's around $3 million net movement of resources. We've been finding it harder and harder to find things to remove because this is the sixth time, and the low-hanging fruit we've already taken, the moderately difficult we've already challenged, and now we're into some of the hard decisions, one of which is the proposal on the 18 ENF in Fairfax County down in Lincolnia. We've been wrestling with that very low-performing line, has great constituency. We've got what we think is a win-win proposition by combining Alexandria and Fairfax services in that one particular area, and we're hoping that we'll be successful with this approach.
If I may, because it looked like we had time. One is just a comment. Looking quickly at the Veers Mill additions, I've taken the bus, not a lot, but enough up to Rockville, and anything that can provide more service, I think that is a route that can use it and have it be appreciated. Are you 5A elimination? I know this group several years ago had a different makeup, and you got a lot of contributions, and the people that made the contributions, for the most part, aren't here anymore. But what I remember is one of the issues were really around workers and workers being able to get out or to and from Dulles when Metro wasn't working, whatever. And yeah. Doesn't exist, yeah.
Well, let me address both questions. Number one, the Veers Mill proposal. We had done a study of Veers Mill and restructured services, I think it was 2010. One of the earlier years that we did this process. And we've seen a ridership growth over the last couple of years. It seems to be working in terms of being more reliable, et cetera. Because the state of Maryland has not provided additional operating money, we're trying to find a way to cannibalize the existing resources to create the limited stop run, which becomes a precursor to the BRT, to similar to the strategy we did in the New Hampshire Avenue corridor, where the K-9 Metro Extra service has been wildly popular. I think we're up over 1,500 riders a day now. And the K-6 has grown almost 20%. So it wasn't just the new route, but by making the local route work better, we were able to really have a bonus of success there. We'd like to try and find a way to replicate that in Veers Mill. Frankly, this is just the best we can with what we have. Did you just find a way to gang up on MDOT, get a few extra dollars? You'd be a lot better off. The issue of 5A. Service has been running about 15 years, initially started by the District of Columbia. It's just background for those of you that don't live the Dulles corridor like Ms. Hirshhorn does. It was started originally with a job access grant, providing a way for folks in the district to gain access to the employment market in Dulles. Once we started running buses, we also found that there were a lot of folks at Dulles who wanted to get to the city, and folks in particularly the Herndon-Reston area who found it very convenient to commute into town. 6 years ago, one of the compromises was to increase the fare, which previously had been our express route fare, to create a new category of airport, which was equivalent to the fares that Fairfax County made their own long-range express buses. And so that's when we created the $6 fare that then became the $7 fare. The line itself has the highest cost recovery of any service that we operate, running between 65 and 70%. Last year, with the opening of the Silver Line, Fairfax County started a new route from the Wheelie Avenue station to the airport that sort of wanders through that community there. The Dulles Airport started a new Washington Flyer route that used to run out of West Falls Church, had very little ridership, moved it up to Wheelie, lowered the fare, and that has been pretty successful in providing a new connection to the airport. The 5A has seen about a third of our ridership reduced in the last year. After the Silver Line opened, we went from about 1,500 a day down to about 1,000. It still actually retains performance that is approximately mid-pack for Virginia services in terms of subsidy per customer. So there's really no performance standard or guideline reason to be talking about it again. As the board deliberated at over the approval of the fiscal 16 budget, there was a discussion between Maryland and Virginia about whether Maryland wanted to continue to contribute to operating the service to Virginia, which is a regional service. And that has meaning in terms of the budget. A regional service is funded by an allocation formula by all jurisdictions. A non-regional service is paid 100% by a local government. The V30, which is the comparable service connecting the airport, BWI from Greenbelt, is non-regional and is 100% funded by Maryland DOT. It has been since its inception a little more than a decade ago. So there was this philosophic discussion, and the compromise was that they would advertise it, solicit input from the public as to whether it was essential to, or not essential to operate, seeing these new services and the extension of the Silver Line. And that's where we are, soliciting public feedback. You referenced a Riders Advisory Council study of the airport services, and you all made some recommendations. We had conducted a service evaluation of the airport services just prior to that. And so at the time, the recommendation was that we should operate the service until the railroad gets to the airport, at which time it would either be discontinued or those resources would be redesigned to serve a different market. And so that's sort of where our official position is right now, is soliciting input, and we look forward to reporting back to the board and finding out what direction they want to give us.
Can you give us some insight as to what constitutes an unproductive route segment? Is there a set criteria that's evaluated? Is it financial, ridership responses?
Yeah, we actually, in December of each year, we publish a report called the Productivity Report, and it has five factors passengers per day, passengers per hour, passengers per mile, subsidy per passenger, and cost recovery. And the what we do is we establish what the average is for the system, and then there is a threshold of half for low-performing routes. And this last year, we actually introduced the concept of lines that are exceeding performance as a way to highlight the fact that about a third of our services are not meeting standard because of crowding, because they're too successful and we need additional resources. And so we published that report, and people euphemistically like to call it the cut list. It's not intended to be that. It's intended to show the relative performance of between lines. It's difficult to take a Metro bus productivity study and then compare it against a Ride-On or a Dash or one of the local operators because of the way that the information's calculated, but it does very definitely show those lines that have lower ridership or higher subsidies. As I mentioned in the board guidelines, we as staff have an obligation to then take a look at those lines, find out if there's a way to make them more productive. And productive can mean increasing the ridership, or it can mean trimming the service to try and get to those thresholds. It's more important on the regional services because there's sort of a commitment by all the jurisdictions that a regional service will have a certain level of performance. On the non-regional, which is 100% paid for by that jurisdiction, it's really a policy decision for them to make as to whether they want us to continue to run and how much service they want us to run. And so what you find with Metrobus is there are no absolutes. There's always one exception. There's our system with 175 lines and more than 300 route variations. There is enough statistical substance that we can find things on the extreme ends of the bell curve, no matter where you are.
We have time for one more quick question and one more quick answer.
I'll be really quick on mine. Kind of following up on that, does your evaluations take into effect the journey length of a passenger or how many people are on the bus at that time? Because I look at some of these routes and go, someone might be coming from an area all the way to the end of the route and be one of the last 10 people on the route, but they've been on the bus the entire time versus some of the routes where it goes. I'm looking at the 30 buses tend to kind of binge and purge, if you will. It's really full, and then no one's on it, and then it gets really full again, and no one's on it. And so it makes sense to kind of cut those up. But do you guys take into effect how many people are kind of on the bus at the end of the route and where they kind of started their journey from without looking at, you know, do they have to hop off and jump on the
bus?
By the way, Ryan, that was not a quick question.
I'll try my best to make a quick answer. One, the current productivity report is purely mathematics. Total ridership, total hours gets you an average. Two, when we do generate service proposals, the service planners do look at that. They look at where people are getting on, getting off. One of the wonderful things about having the Smart Trip and over 85% of our riders boarding a bus with Smart Trip is we're able to do more analysis of actual trip origins and destinations and see, as you say, the folks that stay on through the binges and purges. The third thing is we have been developing over the last year a new set of Metro bus service guidelines. We look forward to getting a chance to come present that to you over the winter. And in that, there is a factor that looks at the directness of the trip and the travel time and tries to give some tone to the customer experience because the goal is to get, hard as it is for me to believe, people don't ride the bus just because the bus is so cool. They're trying to get someplace. And so we're trying to find a way to measure how quickly and effectively we can get them where we're trying to get.
Thank you, Jim, Julie, Jason, and Lisa. Thanks for taking time out of your evening. We really appreciate it. And, of course, if there are any other questions, John, were you collecting the questions by email and then pass them along? Is that the protocol? Okay, so please, if anything else comes to mind, I'm sure that they'd be happy to receive our comments and suggestions.
And come back tomorrow for the formal hearing, right early, right often, as much as 3 minutes you can say.
Thank you all very much. The next item on our agenda is the approval of the past minutes. First of all, I'd like to ask, does anybody have any corrections over what they've seen in the packet? Okay, if not, do I have a motion for approving them as is? A second? Okay, as approved. Motion approved. Oh, we have to take a vote. Okay. Do we really? Let's vote on approving the past minutes. Do we have who's all in favor, please?
Aye.
All opposed? Any abstentions? Okay. Please let the record note that we approved. Do you have the total? All right. The next item on our agenda are the committee reports. The first is the chair's reports. The chair's report to WMATA, the WMATA Board of Directors. I talked to Barbara today. She said it is in our packets here, so if you would like to look over that on your own time, you're please welcome to it. And Barbara also told me, John, that you could fill us in on the chair's report from the September committee meeting. Is that correct?
It's also in your packet, but I will just read over. Sorry for the technical issue as well. So, there have been actually, for a board that was supposed to take August and the first part of September off, our board has been meeting for a bit. They had a meeting, a special safety and security meeting on September the 3rd to discuss the August 6th derailment, and our board members went over the discussion of the basic cause of the derailment, why the train derailed, why the issue with the track wasn't detected earlier, and then sort of the next steps that Metro is planning to take to make sure that things like that don't happen again. You probably saw a lot of the, I assume if you keep up in the newspaper, you probably saw a lot of articles. And then the board resumed its regular meeting schedule last Thursday on the 10th. The Customer Service and Operations Committee, they approved opening a new bus station for our customers in the park, which is exciting to come in place for the rain. There was a discussion of our customer care program, which is a pilot to try and improve our frontline customer service delivery. Right now, we are focusing on giving our employees the tools that they need to sort of be empowered to get customers the correct information. Also, to make performance sort of a bigger part of the job description. Just an example that I think you might think is interesting is one of the tools that they're working on is giving station managers real-time status in terms of what is broken at their stations and the estimated data completion of repairs. So if an escalator goes down, you know, presumably the station manager will get asked 5, 10, 15, 20 times a day, you know, when is this escalator going to be fixed? And they don't have right now a good, easily accessible way to find that information. And obviously that's frustrating for you as an employee that you can't answer a very common question. So that was one of the things that was highlighted. Another
I remember, John, I remember asking the guy at Columbia Heights about one of the escalators, and his response was, don't worry about it, because as soon as they're done with that one, they're going to work on the other one.
Right. You know, and it's as a human being, you feel frustrated when you can't answer people's questions, so this will help you. The other big highlight is that of our out of 10 the only two that we're meeting our target on are escalator availability and elevator. So things like bus on-time performance, rail on-time performance, customer satisfaction, customer injury rate, those kind of things we are not hitting. Not maybe surprising, but, you know, a reminder. And then at the Finance Committee, there was a very high-level discussion of what Metro's going to do for its budget next year, which, even though it doesn't get until July 1st, is, you know, we're thinking about it now. There was some very high-level guidance given by the board. Very much the same among some board members, nothing official. There's resistance to increases in fares as part of next fiscal year's budget or any decreases in fares. Just for those of you that may not have gone through it, by board policy, Metro is supposed to look at adjusting its fares every 2 years based roughly on the consumer price index. The rate of inflation. So for the past for the past several years, not this July, but the July before, and then 2 Julys before that, we raised fares about the average with the inflation of the 2 years previous. So whether or not that will happen again is coming up. Concerns our board members.
Thank you, John.
The board's check.
Thank you, John, and thank you for reminding me that we actually have to vote on things instead of just having motions. all right, so let's move on with the committee reports. If you guys don't mind, I'd like to do the PPP committee first. My understanding is that there's a little bit of a time restriction with one of the people making a presentation. So. Ryan, could you please act on behalf of our committee? And first of all, please, if you could give just a detailed description, or not detailed, a brief description of sort of what the committee does.
I would ask everyone to go to page 20 on the packet, because I think there's actually a good breakdown of what all the committees are doing, specifically what sort of IRAC initiative there is for them. And you can see the ones we have for the PPP committee. We classify ourselves as the umbrella committee of when it doesn't fit in another committee, it all comes to us. But we like to think that allows us to be sort of visionary on a lot of things. We have had a series of meetings. We've met with the AAC on numerous occasions to discuss accessibility seating and priority seating on buses and rail. Two areas we want to focus on tonight is actually kind of the social media presence of the RAC as a whole. We generally feel that we're not good right now of getting a lot of the messaging out. And Ronnie's actually done quite a lot of work and put together a whole presentation in the packet here. So I'd like her to go ahead and start, because you do have a time commitment, and give your presentation briefly. And then we'll talk about the other one, which is actually a full consideration to the RAC committee, and I'll do that one after.
Thanks, Matt. So you have a copy of the deck in your packet, and it's also projected above here, so please follow along. You may have also seen it earlier today. What I do want to make clear is that for right now in this discussion, this is the PPP committee coming to you with some of our discussions with the recommendation as to having a social media presence that is kind of owned and operated by the RAC. But what we'd like to do today is not necessarily vote on anything. We're bringing this for discussion. We'd like your feedback and generally potentially your agreement in moving forward with this. So, again, no formal voting right now. We're not asking you to commit to anything as a committee, as the RAC. We just, as a committee, want to present our recommendations. So, if you will, please flip a couple of slides. Go one more. So, our assessment is that, in general, the communication between ridership, the RAC, and WMATA is limited. There are options out there for how the public ridership can bring issues up to WMATA, but again, it's not necessarily bringing to light this streamlined approach. It's not necessarily real time, and it's not necessarily representative of the ridership. For example, today we had public comment that was one rider expressing an issue that that affects many, many riders, and we don't see that capacity. So there are options. There are limitations to those options, and what we really feel, if you can skip to the next one, is that transforming how the RAC communicates with riders can establish us as the RAC in a more prominent light. It can establish a trusted liaison between WMATA and the ridership. We can receive feedback on a larger scale in a more streamlined, real-time fashion, and we can consolidate communication. If you think about it, there's lots of unofficial rider groups out there. That communication potentially goes nowhere. I mean, there's this perception among riders that the feedback that they're providing is not necessarily received or of interest even to WMATA. So our hope is that we can transform that into what would have this outcome of a ridership that has larger trust, more trust in WMATA, and then potentially reflects in more riders for WMATA. So what that means really is that the PPP committee is recommending that the RAC has a social media presence. What we believe would be effective is having this two-phase kind of rollout, one in which we establish our presence, so reaching out to the board, reaching out to WMATA, reaching out to these unofficial groups, and making our presence known, making our kind of mission known, designing the platform within our group before it kind of is out there for everyone to see, and getting all of that set up so we really kind of make our presence known before we implement. And then once we implement, we can bring in different pieces of how we streamline this communication, how we liaise, how we can potentially even be sharing information back to the riders. And if you think about some of the things that we've heard today, there are public forums, there are, I forget the exact word, the roadshow. The roadshow, those are things that we could publicize potentially so that more and more people can learn about them. We have the advantage of this technology that we are not necessarily using right now. So, again, going back to what we'd like to do today, we've kind of laid out our general presentation to you. Why do we need this? What do we need? And what are we proposing? So there's limited communication. We really think that we can streamline this communication and build our brand as the RAC in a stronger light by having this social media presence. And what we'd like you to look at now is our proposed mission. You can skip to the next slide, please. Our proposed mission is that we establish a social media presence administered by the RAC to serve as a trusted liaison between the ridership and WMATA, to gather large-scale feedback and gain ridership perspective on WMATA issues, to develop well-informed initiatives that are supported by WMATA riders, and to communicate to WMATA as a recognized and trusted organization of riders. In support of that, if you can skip to our objectives, we view the social media as an opportunity to strengthen our presence with riders, to distinguish ourselves and our purpose from WMATA, to convey to the riders that we have a direct channel to suggest initiatives and recommendations to the WMATA Board of Directors. We will not represent WMATA in any capacity as a customer service outlet or a marketing and branding tool. So this is really a way that we can say we are the riders, we're representing the riders, but we want to be this trusted liaison between WMATA and the board and the riders that are out there. This is our proposal. Again, bringing it to you for general feedback and hopefully agreement so that we can move forward with a couple of items that we can discuss in more detail. I would like to open it up to everyone, and I don't know if Dan, if you need to do that, but for comments and feedback and questions.
I can facilitate. Yes, let's just have an open discussion. We've got 5-10 minutes. I'll try to facilitate if you need. Bob?
How do you avoid becoming what you don't want to become? You know, duplicating customer service complaints and overall, at this date, dissatisfaction with Metro.
So I think that's something that we would have to plan out, but that would be in our objectives as to making very clear when we first set up, so kind of in that establishing our presence phase, very clearly outlining what those objectives are, that we're not just going to be this messaging board for everyone to complain, that we'd actually like to form distinct initiatives that we can take back to WMATA and present to WMATA. So I think that that's a lot in our messaging and how we communicate to the writers what our purpose is.
Can you provide me with an example of what you think is the kind of information or feedback you'll get through this that would be useful to provide to the WMATA, to the board?
Yeah, so some of the stuff that we've discussed, and this is all informal, and this is kind of the discussion we want to have. So some of what we've discussed is having very prescribed questions, in a sense, that lead to, so we can set up an issue that we are looking to get more information on. We set up a prescribed questionnaire or poll. We look for very specific answers that we can have open to the public for a very specific period of time. We get the results of that. The results are open to the public, and the results are then translated into initiatives or some sort of communication back to WMATA for hopeful change. So it would be very prescriptive, as opposed to, here's a question that we're going to ask for open feedback on, and people just kind of write. If you think about a Facebook post, right, like people could just write comments in. That's not streamlined. That's not useful for us in a lot of ways. Having a polled question that's closed answers is very, very much more clean and cleaner, and we're more able to use that information.
Please, also questions, any ideas as well. I mean, I happen to be the chair of the PPP committee. Our main, we're trying to get a good sense of direction, but also any ideas that you guys have that would be very helpful. I think Jeremiah, you were next.
Yeah, to kind of compound what Bob was saying, but also maybe as a suggestion, from my experience with doing this from at least from the private sector customer service organizations, how would you be able to, like, you ask for feedback, soliciting feedback from customers, but yet you won't serve as an arm to formally respond to customer complaints. So part of the concern when you set that, you know, actually I think you kind of sort of answered it by saying that you would do closed-ended questions polling as a method, because one of the concerns that you may have when you establish something like this, where customers do perceive it as being an outlet, and then we're unable to effectively respond or resolve their issue, and then now again we've lost credibility as a committee, and now we're seen at least synonymously with WMATA customer service. So being able to, I think this is a great idea, just but again, having a proposal that would clearly define where the scope of our involvement would be, and like you said, maybe limiting it to polling, like, you know, closed-ended questions would be something that would alleviate that concern.
I think one of the things in my mind that spurred this is that, you know, from a technology point of view, we have the ability to be more than just a body that's representing the opinions of 24 people. And the way, and it, like you said, it does have to be facilitated very carefully. But I think if it's focused on kind of the same, you know, people come here to these meetings, they see presentations, there are certain issues that are come up, people voice their opinions physically here. But my idea of the social media would be a way of getting that same type of targeted feedback from a greater number of people in a timely manner.
I think one of the things about this, too, as we've discussed when we were kind of coming up with it, is right now there's not a good channel of communication. I think that if you go on social media right now, there's pretty much, and I'd go guess about 95% negative feedback on WMATA. And I think it's hard because then WMATA gets into a bunker mentality of, you know, everyone on the outside is always just attacking us. And the same sort of thing happens. WMATA goes out and says, oh, you know, look at how great all the buses are, and isn't the metro running perfectly? And the riders don't see that link up. So I think what this is trying to do is provide kind of a little bit of a de-escalating area for people. I mean, you're going to have the folks that go on Twitter and they just want to rant. And there's Twitter groups that will do consistently that, and that's what they focus on. And WMATA is going to have the brand marketing that they're going to send out because they're an organization and that's what they're supposed to do. I think having us sort of in that middle ground of we actually do have some ability not to just be a random person on Twitter ranting about WMATA or someone within the WMATA organization praising how great WMATA is doing, which doesn't seem credible from either angle, is really have that kind of middle ground that we don't represent WMATA as an organization. We're also a representative body of all the riders, so we're not coming in and saying, okay, we're going to take every one thing that someone says, and suddenly that's going to be an initiative that we're going to make WMATA do. So I think it's, in some ways, giving ourselves the legitimacy to have these conversations, but also providing some point. You know, there's going to be shells that are lopped right over our heads, and both sides are going to kind of continue fighting it out amongst themselves, but if we can provide some sanctuary that people can actually have a normal and honest conversation, I think is really what we're trying to do with this, as well as get more people engaged. I think what Dan was saying is we don't want to just be the 24 of us talking all the time.
I think there's a much better social media presence. I remember as I was getting interested in this, I was just like going online to the website, and it was just like that simple web consumer. So I think a little bit more visibility of, like, who are the people behind the faces and coming to these meetings and giving people that different flexibility. So it's like, yes, you have a public forum here that's open, but maybe it might be a thing where people can also tweet in questions for the meeting or send in, like, a video or something else like that. So those are the really good things. The concern is that it's a floodgate of situations. Like, if you open it up and you get, within a day, you know, there's a big situation on the red line, 100 people are tweeting over to the RAC Twitter account, but every one of us is also doing our regular day job or something else like that, then you're getting into that problem of there's no response coming back in, and then people just don't recognize that this is the function, it's just to sort of be there. So I do think there is room for a greater social media presence, but I do think it has to be more one-directional, like the directional of putting out information and saying, these are the avenues upon which you can respond back in, like, you know, yeah. Like that. But if there's a larger part about consolidating the information and it being the avenue on which we share information, what Metro does, like, I think it was really fantastic to hear about all of the wonderful work, like, that the bus does, doing like road shows and those other things. And it's like, how would I find out about that? And it may be, is this an avenue where in which, as we collect, as we hear from those different constituencies within WMATA about this information and putting that out there? Just know that there is this social media or just general communication campaign that the different aspects of Metro does. It's just, you know, provided upon like six different avenues, which I think makes it more difficult. And I think the other part about just like sort of seeing and inviting into, because I'm sure everybody here has heard about the Writers Union, which started this weekend. Like, I think it's a lot easier for just people to say, we've got 400 people signed up our membership in the city, and then it dies off slowly, whereas we don't really have that flexibility. Like, we have to follow Robert's Rules of Order and parliamentary proceedings and things like that, so the flexibility being closer tied to Metro kind of limits us in that regard. But I do think there's room to sort of being like, you know, can we invite or have a situation where like a local newspaper comes in and like talks about, hey, meet the council, the RAC council, because who these people are. It kind of gives a face to that so people can see that there is this body here going on. I don't want to put too much effort into it, because I know once you put effort into it and it doesn't land, then it burns, like it crashes and burns, and that's terrible. That's even like, it's worse than doing nothing. So just want to be like proactive in making sure that what we do is in a controlled manner, given the bandwidth of, you know, a voluntary council.
James?
Social media is obviously an important sort of communications tool. I think one of the challenges, however, at least some of the studies I've seen of social media, is that still about 90% of the users are lurkers, and only about 10% of the users actually originate content or communications. And so, unfortunately, you're still dealing with a self-selected group
that choose to express an opinion or whatever. And so it is one of those things, again, still of trying to determine how representative is that comment, or whether it's just a person who tends to be more vocal of expressing their opinions and whatnot, because 90% of the people aren't saying anything, even on social media. I think also one of the things here in this situation is, at least with having the staff blog Planet Metro, I mean, I've seen some conversations there back and forth regarding planning of services and policies and issues. And so I think it would also be somewhat of a challenge here to not have this devolve into basically another sort of complaint window for Metro, because you've got the planning staff already trying to engage conversations with the public regarding some of the service planning and policy issues. So I think it's going to be a challenge.
I think that's a very good point about sort of the majority, or the how representative it really is. And I think that one idea that we had is that we would have a wider group of people that they would be willing to periodically receive something where it's like a yes or no or something like that. They may not have the time to come here or have the time to write out an answer, but if something comes to them, they'll give you a yes or no, and in that sense, you're more apt to get the people that are either ambivalent or positive about something, and not just the people that are vehemently against or negative about something.
I'm just jumping in for the day. I think there is that dynamic about 90%, because I remember when Metro does like the annual survey, it came back out, and then I don't know if Metro does like a formal job, I guess that's my answer to it, publishing what the results were, but I remember it was mentioned in like a Post article, and stuff, it was like 80% of that. And I remember when I was reading that on my way into work, and it was already in Metro, and I was like, that has to be possible. They must have lost my response to the mail. But I think that kind of goes like, we have to be mindful not to like addressing what a 15-minute problem, because it's like a much larger systemic one, but it's like, if overall the process works, you know, and part of my job is like, I have vendors come in, and like, one of them was a contractor for the laundry service who's on campus, and he's like, we get it, like, we're a laundry service, like, it's not sexy, it's, you know, it's the Metro you're getting to work in. The goal is to get you to point A to point B, and then it works, and if you're happy with it, you're not going to really think about it. It's when it goes wrong that it kind of, like, comes in. So, I just wanted to keep that in my mind.
Constantly up.
Thank you.
one of the things that, it's interesting you mentioned friends, because one of the things that I envisioned was, you know, one easy way to multiply the representativity of this group is for each of us to take three of our friends and receive feedback directly from them, and then each of us channels that feedback. So, you know, you could potentially start out with a smaller number of people that are people that you can kind of vouch for and see how that works functionally. Yeah.
Hi, Jason Menzer, Director of Customer Research. I really applaud the RAC for wanting to engage the writing public more. I think that's a great opportunity. I've heard a number of things here that I just wanted to remind the group. A number of weeks back, I presented on a customer community we're establishing. This is of 5,000 customers that is going to, as closely as possible, reflect the writing population. I think this also might be an opportunity to get answers to some of the questions you have to potentially help in your planning and drive, you know, your efforts. So I wanted you to put that out there and for you to take it into consideration.
Thank you, Jason. I really appreciate that. Let's just take a few more comments here.
I was going to take the last comments if you want to. Go ahead.
I think one of the things that is important also about having this social media presence is right now I don't think the social media presence really does any good for anyone involved. I mean, it's we all have seen the folks on Twitter that kind of yell about WMATA to each other rather than talking to WMATA. I mean, it's a very simple thing. You know, like you get angry about something and you go to the other guy and you're like, aren't you angry about this too? And you get everyone riled up, but you're not really trying to solve anything. And I think why I feel like this absolutely needs to happen is there's all that social media traffic, and yet we don't see a single one of those people, except for Jeff, who's very nice. We don't see any of those people show up and do public comment at our meetings. So we got all these people yelling about WMATA and what WMATA should do differently, and we rarely ever see any of them actually approach us or approach the group here with any sort of steps to move forward. So I think we need to provide at least some avenue to start allowing that to happen, or even just get people here to actually have those conversations.
Yeah, I would before I came here today, like, I tweeted at the Writers Union, like, someone coming to the RAC meeting today. And just sort of, like, I mean, I haven't heard anything back from there, but this is just, like, being that out front and just being, how do we get people here? And maybe the question is, are there different avenues that if people can't commit to coming in, is there another means by which we allow the public to advise and get consensus?
Exactly. So I just wanted to take the last comment to say, to kind of recap some of the feedback. So there are positives in that we can get our faces out there, we can really make who we are known, and we can get feedback on a larger scale. But there are concerns that we've talked about today, more so how can we control the agenda, how do we avoid becoming this dumping ground, how can we own the information and responsibly respond, effectively respond to the information that's gathered. And then how do we manage sustainability so that we don't crash and burn and embarrass ourselves? So what I'd like to do as next steps is take this back to the committee, take these kind of major concerns back to the committee, let us think through them a little bit, and let us kind of formulate our responses to how we would address those items, and really if there's any other kind of due diligence that we need to do on our end. Jason, I appreciate you reaching out to us, because I think that we will end up following up with you and seeing what we can do to further that avenue as well.
I'm bad at microphones. And to get the feedback that you're looking for.
Yeah.
So please consider it.
Absolutely. So Dan and Ryan, as the stand-in for PPP, I think that we can figure something out within our committee to make sure that that happens. Thank you all for considering. And if you have questions or comments or suggestions throughout the next week or couple of weeks, please send them over and send them to the committee or me, and I can pass it along. Thank you so much.
Ryan, I believe you have one more thing. With respect to the PPP, I would ask you to do it as briefly as possible.
Yeah.
Okay, so on the very last page, 35 of 35, we have a formal proposal. Many of you have seen this because it's already been sent out. In a nutshell, we don't think WMATA is doing enough to actually engage on the mobile apps that are out there to kind of give customers feedback on WMATA services. So I'm looking at things like NextBus and NextTrain and others. We're not advocating for WMATA to develop their own apps, but we feel that WMATA needs to be at least involved and maybe have a certification process for these apps, because when they break or they don't do what they're supposed to do, no one blames the app developer. They complain about WMATA. And so in many ways, it doesn't make sense why WMATA doesn't want to at least have some involvement in order to ensure that they don't get the negative side marketing when these apps, which they essentially have no control of right now, kind of fall apart. So what we have been doing is we are proposing that the board look at encouraging WMATA to work with the app developers to kind of put a certification process in place to allow WMATA to have the right to sort of say, this app is taking our information and is providing it in a useful, timely, correct, and appropriate way. And then the apps that they don't give certifications to can kind of give some indication that these apps may not be as reliable. At least in some ways, it gives WMATA a chance to sort of control how people are using the apps and also how the apps are being kind of represented out in the market.
Okay. Do we have a motion?
And I move to accept the resolution as written.
Do I have a second?
Second.
I'd like to open it up for discussion. Does anybody have any comments on the resolution put forth? We're voting for approving the resolution as written in our packets. Okay. Okay. There's no discussion, so I'd like to open this to a vote. All in favor of the resolution as it appears in our packet, please say yes.
Aye.
Aye. Anybody that is opposed? Any abstentions? Okay. Let the record show that the resolution as it appears in the packet has been approved unanimously. Thank you, Ryan. And thank you for the other committees for the patience with the PPP committee. We've been waiting for a while to move on those two items, so I appreciate giving us a little extra time. The next committee is the Budget and Finance Committee. That's you, Jeremiah, right?
Yeah, thank you, everyone. Before I actually go through this, I would ask, especially directed towards the newer members, currently the Budget and Finance Committee is a committee of one due to the changes. Currently it's me. So
that makes it easy to make decisions, right?
The way, yeah, I'm not sure if somebody's had a chance to go over it with you guys, but the way we like for the committees to be structured would be a representative, at least one from each of the jurisdictions. It actually kind of works out with Maryland and D.C. and me being Virginia, if you two would be so kind to volunteer to help work with me. But again, I'll leave that decision up to you. You don't have to tell me right now. But so just kind of keep that in mind. I can use some support for that committee. On Monday, this past Monday, the 14th, myself, Barbara, who dialed in from Colorado, John and Mark Schofield met just regarding the budget, the preliminary budget proposals that are, it's that time of year for the fiscal year 2017 budget. And actually, just kind of briefly, I wasn't at the previous WMATA board meeting. My understanding from those that were present, I think John alluded to it earlier, was that the board members, or certain board members, I think in specifically D.C., who are steadfastly opposed to any type of increase for bus service, bus fares, and representatives in Maryland who are steadfastly opposed to any increase in rail service. Again, that's where the perception, although not on the record and not official, is that a rate increase would be challenged this year. And I do think from a rider advocate perspective that we do have to be on board with that, with the service issues that we've had this year. To for us to be able to, or for WMATA in general, to be able to implement a fare increase without any type of service increase, if you will, or customer satisfaction increase would be would just further alienate the customer base and current ridership. So with that being said, some of the things that we did discuss with Mark that we would like to see the board at least push forward from a budget perspective would be some ideas would be to offer a flat, and it's in the packet, offer a flat rate off-peak Metro Rail fare for riders embarking and disembarking within the District of Columbia. The idea behind it is by offering a simplified fare for off-peak riders in D.C., RAC feels it may encourage more utilization of rail over other services such as Capital Bike Share and Uber. Mark and I believe the financial team in general kind of do tend to see that there is maybe some opportunities there to try to increase ridership during off-peak times, and so this would be one way to do it. It would offer a very incremental step into fare simplification to offer a flat rate within, let's say, the district. Very easy for tourists to understand. Very, from a rider perspective, if I'm coming from Metro Center and going to Woodley Park, if during off-peak time, and I know it's only going to cost me $1.75, even if I have to wait 15 minutes, I may be more inclined to take Metro Rail over spending $7 on Uber to get where I'm going. So I think that's something that may pick up some that may be something that the board would strongly consider looking into. Another option that I believe is in the planning phase right now with the WMATA Finance Department is combining creating a combined fare and parking pass option. I think we can help encourage that along if we ask the board to push that initiative and to ask the Finance Planning Committee to really come focus their efforts and resources on finding that happy median between a combined fare and parking pass option. And this would be an option, the benefits obviously would be guaranteed revenue regardless of utilization, and it may even entice more ridership, especially if it's structured in a way that seems to offer some type of discount to regular commuters. I guess some of the challenges they have is trying to find that happy medium. Another proposal that I think that we need to ask the board is the transfer rate between rail to bus and bus to rail is, I believe, 50 cents. That rate has not changed in, Patrick may know the last time it changed, probably, 10 years ago or something, but rates have actually gone up, but the discount between transfers has actually stayed the same. So, in effect, that discount has been diluted. I think if we as a RAC can formally ask the board to adopt a measure to where that transfer discount is increased based on any fare increase that goes into effect so as to, in a sense, keep that discount proportionately whole, would serve to more for customer satisfaction. It may not increase ridership, so it may not be revenue neutral, but from a customer relations standpoint, I think it would be a big win. One other point would be structuring parking fare based on demand with a cap on cost at current levels. This may create more confusion, so it may kind of be counterintuitive to our objective of fare simplification. Looking at what the customer response would be or the satisfaction rate for something like the hot lanes where parking at the garage, Mark used East Falls Church where it's 110% utilized versus I think he said Greenbelt where it's like 30% or something, whatever it is roughly. Don't quote him on the percentages or me, but it was something where the parking can be adjusted based on demand, but capping it at whatever the maximum already is. So in essence, it's not really a fair increase, or sorry, it wouldn't be an increase in cost, but it may actually fluctuate based on demand. Finally, something that I actually do think that I was surprised to hear this, that Metro actually does not have a policy in place for issuing automatic refunds. I think there was an automatic refund that was issued by WMATA for the train derailment. That was the first one in a while, I believe. But I think as a RAC, from a ridership advocate, I think we should propose asking the board to establish or establish some type of policy, public policy, that establishes where occurrences where Metro or WMATA would issue an automatic refund to Smart Trip card holders. If there's a service delay for, like, say, example, a 30-minute increase in commuter time because of a service-related issue, that would trigger an automatic refund by WMATA. And I think that would go serve a long way from a rebuilding this relationship with the customer base. And I know that, sorry, if this is stepping on some of the customer service side of it, but, you know, it's when this was kind of focused on fare simplification, but if we're simplifying the experience for the customer in refund process, that's my justification.
First of all, I'll say, Jeremiah, I remember, you know, I think at the beginning of the year, you guys doing a wonderful job with respect to the alternatives for the fare increases as a committee. And, you know, you guys are dealing with these financial matters very professionally. I'm just curious, with respect to the ideas that you have here, are you guys, or are you in this case, working towards having some kind of a resolution that's passed by the RAC to send on to the board, or are you looking at some other more informal mechanism to pass that up, these suggestions?
Yeah, I think at this point, what we want to do, so by the next committee, I believe the budget will be formally presented in November. The preview, right, and adopted or proposed formally in December. Right? Yeah, so it is to have a proposal of what ideas, if any of these proposals that I just mentioned, plus any ones that you may have in regards to simplifying fares, that we can actually formally adopt and recommend as a RAC, as a full committee that we can submit to the board, then that's what I'm looking for. If there is any one of these that I would actually encourage us to actually focus on, would be the one that's actually the policy on issuing refunds for unforeseen matters. I think that's something the AAC has looked at as well, so we can do it in conjunction with the AAC and ask the board to actually establish a policy.
Right. Hold on, Pat. I think that Clarence had to raise his first.
Yeah, so my comment was about the fare. If you want to go ahead,
okay.
Letting
thank you. That's very nice, Clarence. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you. Okay. Yeah, I just wanted to reiterate from where AAC is standing with its own fare policy working group, the general consensus of no fare increase is something that we're striving towards also. So I think joint recommendations as much as we can between the two groups is important. One of the areas that we're interested in, and I think goes along with what was just said, is that when you have work slowdowns or when you know that work is going to be slowed down, let's say because of track work or whatever, one of the costs that drive up Metro Access is that they are using the fastest route between bus and rail to get from point A to point B, twice that usual fare. In the calculations, I'm not sure that if you have a slowdown in work or a slowdown in the system because of track work, that's being calculated, being met into the calculations going forward. One of the things that our people found interesting is that the areas where they are going to be increasing the work on the tracks and where you're going to have slowdowns, I think that's known well in advance. But I don't know that's relayed to the customers. And so I think that could be a factor in us looking at and presenting some of that information going forward, saying how can you increase rates on bus and rail when we have all these slowdowns coming on, and are we being treated fairly? Do you think that perhaps a decrease in some of the fares might be a way to go? So it's something we're very much in agreement with the RAC on. We will have some similar proposals. I would suggest that as much as we can, and maybe in the October 22nd RAC AAC meeting, joint fare policy proposals might be a way to go forward.
That's a good idea, Pat. Just time-wise, I think we've got about 5 more minutes to dedicate to this so that we leave some time for you, Lorraine, and the Customer Service Committee. Jeremiah, do you have a response to Pat?
Yeah, so again, that's what I would, ask if anyone can submit any, in addition to these proposals, or recommendations, if anyone could submit any other proposal recommendations to me before the next meeting, so that way I can actually write something and submit it for vote by the next committee meeting. But again, the focus, my focus again would be on the refund, as well as a fare reduction for known track work, as well as a policy for an automatic refund for unforeseen service issues. I can propose it now, but also I would, if it's okay, but I mean, because I doubt there would be, I don't know if there would be any debate, but if so, I can table it. But I would propose that as a REC, that we recommend to the board no fare increase or service reductions this year based on the service issues.
John, what do you think on, should we, can we vote on this or make a declaration, or is it better to wait? I mean, it seems like, Jeremiah, in general, you have a, you know, one of the struggles that we have with the RAC is providing the board with ideas or what, you know, something in a timely manner. A lot of times we're either way too early or late. It sounds like you're timing this so that they're going to be receiving these recommendations right when they're looking at those issues and can make a decision. So I don't know if we want to.
So that's the case. Yeah, where should I table it and wait till it's officially proposed, and then we can, I mean, what is the normal protocol here?
I don't know that there's a protocol. I mean, I think you're going to want to get to them sooner rather than later, but now might be too soon. I think October or even early November might be
okay.
More time.
All right. That's fine. Then I'll table the motion.
But the other thing is, Jeremiah, I mean, you guys are very organized in how you present things. So, you know, having them all sort of presented at the same time in a coherent fashion, I think, can really make a good impression. I think it'd have more weight than just something coming out of nowhere. All right, can we go around the table real quickly?
I don't know if you're going to want me on the committee after I say this, but I may be the one person who is. I'm more okay with the fare increase because it's looking at the long-term thing. And so postponing a fare increase for a year, it requires that it means, like, the long-standing issues that the agency doesn't have the more funds to do it. And so while I get the politics of, like, well, the service isn't great, how can you request a fare increase? The reality is the service is going to continue to be not great or potentially even worse if we don't get the allocations of money to do the things that we need to do. And so if it's like, well, 10 years down the line, the service gets better because we were able to allocate more money to it now versus 10 years down the road, the service is worse because we weren't able to secure the funds, I think that's something that you need to keep in mind. Just in terms of, you know, if your car gets busted, that's what it costs to repair it, and you can't say, well, it was a terrible car, so I'm just going to wait for you.
Lorraine?
On the other side of what you just said is that if you keep increasing the fares and you keep giving substandard service, people are going to get fed up. I know a lot of people that used to be regular transit riders that are so fed up that they're driving and they'd rather be in traffic for over an hour than deal with Metro. And that is going to keep happening and happening and happening. So you have to try to get to the customer good faith effort. We have all these problems, and we know that we have been giving you substandard service, So we're not going to charge you. We're going to find, try to get the funds elsewhere. That is the only place, the only way that you can get more people in the, into the system. People are getting out of the system, and the statistics reveal that. They know that this is happening, and that's why they didn't propose a fare increase this year.
So the quick response I'll say that is, you know, if costs increase as just the year, like if the cost of something is going to get more expensive, and to some extent, while it's the I get the politics and the optics, I'm totally there. But like if it costs $3 extra to do this, to say we're not going to give you those $3 extra, find it somewhere elsewhere, and you are not able to find it, means that same issue is now going to still be prolonged. And so I think it's easier said than done to sort of say, like, you don't do a fare increase because acknowledging the level of service, as long as it's made very clear, we'll understand what that means. We're going to be short X millions of dollars, and that's going to also have an impact on service as well.
Okay, hold on. Clarence, we do have to move on. Let's do, Marianne's been waiting, and Bob, and then we're going to have to move on. Marianne?
I was going to say something really similar to you in that there is a pot of money. If we're going to say that we don't want more money, we want to maintain, you know, current ridership, which is a good kind of thing, I think we need to present it in a way that shows that we understand the trade-offs. And is there a way that riders can help their local governments who have all said we're broke and we aren't giving you any more? How do you balance it? I would hope with whatever we come forward with, it provides that we aren't just being cute and saying don't increase fares, but we're understanding the trade-offs that we're suggesting.
Well, Jeremiah, I think you've got a lot of interest, so hopefully you can get some people and have some lively discussions in your committee meetings, and I applaud you for looking at the timing of things with respect to the budget. It would be wonderful to pass something in a very timely manner to the board. Lorraine, would you speak a little bit about the Customer Service Committee, please? Or Bob, sorry. I think I remember you doing that last year. Okay. All right, sorry, Bob. I didn't mean to usurp your power.
At our last meeting of the RAC in July, right, we had a fairly long, a little bit contentious discussion about some of the recommendations that the Customer Service Committee had come forward with. For the benefit of the new members, there were four issues that we were concerned about. One was station managers and how they operate. Secondly was recommending that station managers be given uniforms so people could identify who the station manager was. Third question was whether, to what degree, a station manager has independence in terms of informing the people on the platform, what the status was of incidents, how long they'd have to wait for. And the fourth one was what happens when there is an incident at a station, how do other Metro personnel respond to that incident, that gives some assistance to the station manager. So subsequent to that, we had a conference call, and basically, I'm still waiting to get a little more feedback, because I'd like to bring forward some recommendations that everybody feels comfortable with, and I hope I'll be able to do that at the October meeting.
Well, it sounds like,
I welcome it. You know, we welcome any I think there are five or six members of the customer service committee. Customer service committee.
But well, it sounds like with both the customer service committee and the budget committee that, you know, maybe we can try to dedicate more time at RAC meetings to having a similar discussion as to what the PPP committee had today, to get some maybe just some initial feedback at the beginning. But there's certainly a lot of interest in these issues. Do you have anything else that you'd like to add, Bob, in terms of? Okay. All right. Well, thank
Except
you very much.
Welcome any of the new members to join the customer service meeting. I mean, I'm sorry. Well, there won't be another comment.
All right. Let's see. The last thing on under the agenda for committee reports is to inform you guys that the RAC leadership is meeting with the WMATA Board of Directors in October. And let's see, we have a few minutes for announcements or ideas or comments. Does anybody want to address the board? And please, I'd like you to keep it brief. I think we've got we've got 5 minutes. Ryan?
One of the things that I think, and Clarence actually talked a little bit about this earlier, with he made outreach to them, is this new writers union that has formed. I think it's important for us to maybe have some dialogue or engagement with them, partially just to figure out what are their objectives, but also how we can work with them, because it sounds like at least in some form they're going to be an informal group. But if they're going to have someone who's going to be a spokesman or someone who's going to be the liaison point, they might provide an avenue in which to get ideas for initiatives that need to happen. I think we also need to get some sort of steer on what kind of topic areas they're going to figure out about. Are they a group that's just going to all get together and whinge about WMATA, or they actually have ideas in their union forming to really make some changes to the process? So I would like to kind of formally ask that we look at engaging them in an actual dialogue and kind of figure out how we can work together.
Okay. I guess the issue would be, what would be our next step? I'll talk to Barbara about that. I think she has a good idea. We can talk about that on Monday at our meeting. James, I noticed you had a comment for the budget committee that at that time there wasn't time. I was wondering if you can still remember what you were going to say, and if so, you can. Okay, go ahead.
How about the county?
See, we have 2 minutes. Jeremiah?
Yeah, regarding the Writers Union perspective, though, from a rec standpoint, though, would there be any fear from a rec? As to me, the idea of rec is that we are the representatives of the ridership, and we are the advocate for the riders, not for WMATA. So would having a riders union kind of dilute the influence or the work of the rec? I mean, that would be something that we would want to really consider and
think
about.
Well, I think that, unfortunately, I think we have to cut this short. I think this is an issue that we should, first of all, talk about more ourselves and try to figure out how we're going to deal with it. Maybe we can assign it to a committee, but yes, Jennifer. Oh, you don't have any idea. Oh, okay, all right. But yes, I think there's a lot of energy out there, and I think there's certain protocol as well. So, and that's something we always struggle with the RAC. We want to do something, but we have to be within our mandate as well. Jennifer, the last word.
Thank you. As most of you know, James Jackson, our Writers Advisory Council coordinator, resigned last month, and so a little late, but this is John Pasek. He used to be the Writers Advisory Council coordinator. Some of you may remember John. He's filling in the transition period. We'll be briefing the RAC leadership team on Monday regarding our staffing plan moving forward, so there's not any downtime for staff supporting the RAC. So we'll be going to them on Monday with that, and so rollout will be in October to the rest of the group. So I just wanted to let you guys know that John is filling in those duties right now in absence of James, and so there'll be continued support until we can roll out a full staffing plan next month. Okay? Thanks.
Thank you, Jennifer, and thanks, everybody.
I have a quick question.
Okay.
If the AAC got invited for a tour of the Transit Center on Saturday morning, is it something that any available or Silver Spring-based RAC members could also attend?
Because
I was disappointed that I wasn't invited.
I don't know.
I live across the street from it.
Right. Yeah.
I will, but.
Well, I know AAC members were, I think there was a limit on how many people could attend. You may want to call 962-1100.
I'll show up.
And see.
We'll check with ADAP staff.
Yeah, check with it. Yeah, John, that's the best idea.
So thank you guys for a lively discussion, some good ideas. I think there's some interesting things we can work on. And thanks for your patience with my complete lack of vocabulary with respect to the terms. Have a good week.
I move to adjourn.
Yes, I move to adjourn. Do I have a second? Yes. Motion passed. We don't have to vote on that.